Celtic Stuff Live, the only toll-free call-in webcast produced specifically for Celtics fans. With your hosts, Jughead, JB, and the Duke. Celtic Stuff Live. And now, Jughead, JB, and the Duke.
Good evening, everybody, on this June 4th, 2007. A little over 3 weeks to the draft. Things are heating up. We've got measurements. We've got Jess Camaretto on tonight. We've got questions from emailers. We've got a Ryan Gomes interview. And we have lots of coaching talk. JB, I'm Jughead. Let me introduce myself. I'm Jughead. With me is JB and the Duke. JB, how are you?
Everything's great, Jug. I'm watching a couple of things going on this week that I think are a little bit under the radar. They've been brought up, but I don't think anyone has really stressed enough how important they are. Got an email from our friend Jerry, who we remember went to the Wailing Wall to pray for our lottery. He's given me an update on David Blatt and what his coaching situation is, and then goes on to inquire about what's going on in the front office. And we know that Shira Springer published last week that Doc only got a $1 to $2 million guarantee, so that his extension is not really an extension or a ringing endorsement. The coaches are flying out the door. Wallace is looking for work. Leo Papil tried to hook on with Memphis. I think that's a big story that will be ongoing. And secondly, from Chad Ford, we have some news that our friend Yi is foregoing the even physical-only portion of the camp. He's not only not going to play at the camp or work out, which he didn't do, but this is the first time that Chad ever remembers a player doing that, and his supposition is the only conclusion I can come with, that Yi has a guarantee. And he wants to play for a big market team, probably a team with the big Chinatown or big Asian population. Boston obviously fits. Somebody from Real GM met him in a restaurant, and he said he'd love to play in Boston with Paul Pierce. Chad Ford brings up Golden State and or Chicago as teams that might try to move up to get him. We see the Celtics dancers are in China. What the hell are they doing there? I think Wick is salivating at the possibility. Danny, we know, is enamored with him, which was Chris Wallace's
parting shot.
Enough.
you're gonna do the whole topic. Let's go over to the Duke.
All right.
The Duke, you know, say hello to the audience and what's on your mind tonight.
Hey, audience. A lot of the stuff that JB's been talking about, I think the epicenter of a lot of Celtics talk this week has been the Real GM board, the Celtics Real GM board. There's been a lot of talk there. A couple guys, a couple posters there are claiming to be insiders and have some inside information. We talked a little bit about some of those revelations this week, and some of it's played out with some possible Joe Johnson and Atlanta trade rumors with the Celtics, KG last week, and the Blatt thing. There's a lot of different little whispers we're hearing all around the place, and I think we're going to get into a lot of those tonight. Looking forward to it. And, of course, today the measurements did come out, and the Chad Ford had them on his site. We're going to very shortly have a mashup on the Celtics Stuff Live page on Celtics blog that will have all the players in the top 14 for using the same format that NBA.com did, but also we're going to include in there what numbers they got in the combine, their measurements, height, weight, stand and reach, wingspan, all that good stuff. So you got one-stop shopping, folks, so I'll be there. It's going to be some good stuff. There's a lot to talk about, a lot of little stuff to talk about tonight. It'll be Wow, we have so much to cover, guys.
We do.
Night on a Monday.
And our guest, Jessica Camaretto, just got back from Orlando. She was at the NBA pre-draft workouts down there. So that's going to be, that's going to be excellent. I'm sure she's going to have a lot of info for us, and, I'm excited about that. You know, I want to talk a little bit a little bit about the progress of the show real quick, just to let people know. We do have a lead sponsor for our draft night show, and still in the process of moving over to Celtics Blog. We're hoping and anticipating in the next week, the latest, I would think, 2 weeks, that we will be fully moved over to our page on Celtics Blog. If you look at the top of that page, if you're used to our old website, Celtics Stuff Live, obviously our information is still up there, and we're still using the old blog, but only for a little bit longer. You can see that there's a Celtics Stuff Live tab at the top of the Celtics Blog page where you can find us. JB's been pumping out a bunch of articles, doing a lot of writing. As you can tell from the intro in the show, he's in love with Yee, and he's got late breaking news or early breaking news, however you want to put it, on Yee. Everything Yee, you'll definitely be able to get on our blog page from JB. Also wanted to just put out the word to anybody who might be interested in sponsoring the draft night show. Our lottery night show was very successful. We got I don't know, probably something like 500 unique listeners over the night at least. Numbers really came out really great. So if anybody's interested, they can email Jeff at CelticsBlog@gmail.com. He's kind of taking the front end of things. But just a big shout-out to Goldcoin Rarities or GoldRarities.com for sponsoring the draft show and taking the lead sponsor. So it will be the Celtics Stuff Live NBA draft show on Celtics Blog, brought to you by GoldRarities.com. So big thanks to those guys there. And again, if you're interested in sponsoring the show, you can shoot us an email, CelticsBlog@gmail.com. And so lots of things coming up this week, guys. Like I said, I'm interested to hear a little bit about a lot of these measurements, because I know Jeff Clark put it up on the front page of Celtics Blog that Al Horford did get the measurement. You guys know I'm in love with that guy. I haven't been pumping out the mass propaganda on Al Horford. But, John, you pointed out something in those measurements that kind of should have me a little scared, in the fact that he was pretty slow in the skills drill. Does that drop him out of the lottery?
For those of you who probably – I wouldn't say anything will drop him out of the lottery. For any of you who have looked at this, there's a number of different skills they're measured on: wingspan, stand in reach, their vertical leap, and the one that Jug is referring to is the lane agility drill, which basically measures their ability to go from one side to the other. Horford measured the second slowest time of all of those. Now, let's admit, this isn't, how are these guys doing? These skills aren't exactly, end-all, be-all. Troy Bell in 2003, I think, was the most athletic, the one who tested out the best at this combine. And I think right now he's playing in Uzbekistan with Bilo, Borat's brother, I believe. But I'm not sure about that. But nevertheless, we got there's a lot of different interesting things here. The only one who's slower than Horford in that drill is Kevin Durant, who also failed to put the $185 pound bench press up. There's a lot of different figures here that stand out. The heights are largely, from what I've been able to oversee, guys, is pretty pretty much what we've thought. Jeff Green, there was a report that Jeff Green would measure up at 6'9.5", and in fact he did. We've actually, in this mashup we're going to have, I'm rounding anything that's a half inch and up is, considered up half an inch. So I have him at 6'10 on ours. But a lot of these guys, they're pretty much the size we thought they'd be. There's nothing here that seems earth-shattering to me, with one exception, and that would be Yee. Obviously, Yee did not measure out, and I think JB has some thoughts and maybe a few conspiracies to throw at us, right, JB?
Well, I mean, Chad Ford is the one that reported it. I wanted to ask Jessica a little later what she's heard about it, but it was an extremely bold move. And he basically not only wasn't willing to work out, but he wasn't willing to get measured. And Chad said that's the first time in history that he's ever seen anybody take that kind of pose. And he speculated that he was going to limit himself to major market teams, as I said before, those that had a big Chinese community, which makes sense. We can remember Yao Ming, taking that same position. To add on top of that, there was the fellow you mentioned earlier that some of these people are looking to be, put themselves as insiders. There's a fellow at let me get it here. It was Celtics Esquire on the Real GM board. It says, so check this out. Last night I am at a restaurant in Westwood near UCLA's campus, and guess who walks in with his posse? Yep, you guessed it, Yee. So after downing a few shots of liquid courage, I approach him to say hello. Turns out that he's quite a nice guy who has an almost an 80% command of English. I didn't even have to speak Chinese to him, and I speak a good amount of Chinese. He told me that he's only been living in the U.S. for about 1 month. After chatting with him for about 10 minutes, I got the distinct impression that he will not be drafted by Atlanta or Memphis. He mentioned to me that he's interested in playing for a big market team, i.e. Boston. I asked him if he wouldn't mind being drafted by Boston, and he just gave me a little smirk and said, I would enjoy playing with Jefferson and Pierce. Take it for what it's worth, but it would not surprise me the least if Ainge has already promised to draft him at 5. I think it's pretty much a lock.
But how can Danny promise that when he's actively shopping the pick? You know what I mean? Like, is that really in Yee's best interest if that is the case? I don't know that I totally buy it. And how quickly we all forget the Donnie Darko nightmare. You know, I mean, that just – I sit here and I think about the last time that there was an outstanding size – athletic, sizable and athletic, big with not a lot of information, on his skills and his ability to play, who came over. And you just look at that draft. You look at LeBron. You look at, Carmelo. You look at Dwayne Wade. You look at Chris Bosh. And I'm really concerned that that might be the end result of this draft if they do make that move.
Several big differences, Jug. One is that Darko was 17 years old. He had only played in like minor leagues at Russia. He couldn't get off the bench for the senior team. He played like 11, 12 minutes a game, and some games didn't play. So nobody really had seen him play other than when he came to the workouts. He dazzled everybody with his athleticism. Here we've got a guy who's somewhere between 19 and 23 years old who has played in international competition, done pretty well against the USA team, the Spanish team, has dominated in his home league, took his team to the championship round three years in a row. Beyond that, Danny Ainge has been over there at least twice, scouted him intensely. So there isn't the mystery. There isn't, oh, this guy's athletic, maybe he can play, he's 7 foot, let's draft him. Here's somebody that Danny has absolutely got a book on. And we remember Chris Wallace, and we think it was Chris Wallace. It was a quote-unquote unnamed source saying that Danny was enamored with Yee. I don't think there's much question. And I'm asking you why the Celtics dancers are presently touring China.
Well, because David Stern is all about marketing overseas, and we know that the Celtics have a strong international community, but I don't think that necessarily means that, they don't stand to make any money off of drafting Yee. It's not like Daisuke Matsuzaka, where, they're going to get all of these, they're going to control the revenue. The NBA spreads that revenue around from jersey sales and et cetera. The only thing you could really hope to accomplish is increase in ticket sales. I don't think the Celtics are, I don't think that Yee, makes that big of a difference in ticket sales, not the difference that Kevin Durant or Greg Oden would have.
You're wrong. He might make more of a difference. I live just north of Boston, and the Chinese population in Malden, the town just below me, is up to about a third of the city, and it's a city of 30,000
people. The team was almost selling out games down the stretch, not all, not totally, but they're not going to have a problem selling tickets. They're just not, unless
yes, they are. The minute they didn't get Oden Durant, the phone stopped ringing. It was reported by a couple of people. Season ticket sales are dead right now. And the reason was because people had the hopes that we were going to get Oden and Durant.
But there's no reason there's no reason to think that won't rebound. I hear what you're saying.
With E, you're going to guarantee, you know, like a couple of million people in the greater Boston area all of a sudden are going to get intensely interested in this team. Plus, Danny is pimping him to the owner, saying this guy is the real deal, and he may be more ready to help right now than either Oden or Durant.
Well, quite possibly.
I don't think there's any question he's coming to town.
Well, I think unless, it's... I think it, well, hold Don on, hold Nelson. On. We're headed to break. It's okay. It's room for debate. And when we come back, we're going to have Jess Camaretto.
Celtic Stuff Live is brought to you by Garber Family Dentistry in Salem, Mass. Garber Family Dentistry is a practice that treats both children and adults using modern equipment. That includes intraoral cameras so that you can see what they see. And digital radiography. That's 90% less radiation than conventional x-rays. They also use sedation for people who experience anxiety during dental procedures. That's Garber Family Dentistry. Give them a call, 978-744-8495.
Sold a 1,000,001. Thank you. Bidder number 225.
Allen Auction Company, specializing in distinctive properties and municipal auction services. Using innovative sales and marketing strategies, they ensure that the auction day experience is both positive and profitable. Visit their website, allenauction.com, or call 781-592-8100.
Celtic Stuff Live, the only toll-free call-in webcast produced specifically for Celtics fans, with your hosts, Jughead.
You wait, though. You'll hear it. I'm not saying it's right. If you like Paul Pierce, you're going to have to defend it.
JB.
All his life, he said what he wanted, he ate what he wanted, did what he wanted.
And the Duke.
Maybe he's not quite the idiot. You know, maybe he's just a little bit of a moron.
Celtic Stuff Live.
Well, we're back from break. Hope you're enjoying The Sopranos. Nobody give me the spoiler. I didn't catch it last night. I was coming back from Maryland. That's the reason we didn't have the show. If I didn't have time to do this show, I certainly didn't have time to watch The Sopranos. So I'm going to be checking that out tonight after this show.
You
That's
better.
Right. Oh, yeah. I know, because the spoilers are on the way. I'm going to stay up until 3 a.m. to make sure that nobody spoils me.
It was a good one. It was a good one. That's all I'll say, John. No spoilers, but it was a good one.
Excellent. Well, I'm pumped for it, and I've been cautious to even be on the internet whatsoever, because I know that somebody there is ready to ruin my time. So I'm not going to read the pit. You guys are going to have to monitor the pit, because I know there's people in there who want to ruin it for me. I'm just going to put that away. I'm not going to pay any attention to it, and we're going to bring on our guest tonight. It's Jessica Camaretto. Jessica, thanks for joining us. You're fresh back from the Orlando pre-draft camp, huh?
Yeah, hi guys. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Sorry. Thank you, Jessica. It's always a pleasure. So how you doing? You got any jet lag or you're fresh for us?
No, you know, I got back on Thursday, so slept a little bit on the weekend, and now I'm good to go.
Okay. Can I jump right in with a hard question?
Yeah, go right ahead.
All right, I got it.
JB wouldn't have it any other way, by the way. Let's get down to business.
Yeah, what the hell's going on with the front office in Boston? Doc, it turns out it was only guaranteed $1 to $2 million. Tony Brown's out the door. Leo Papil's trying to make a deal for himself. Wallace is trying to make a deal for himself. What's going on over there? What do you hear?
I think right now, you know, the entire organization is just a big question mark right now. And with so much riding on next season, it'd be foolish for them to start signing people to these big contracts when the first half of the season is really going to be make it or break time for people, especially like Doc Rivers. You know, last year a lot of them got a free pass and they were able to play the injury card, but now it's make it or break it time. So it wouldn't make sense for them to start, you know, having people commit to something long term when they might not be the right people to carry out the Celtics long term plan.
You hear anything about David Blatt?
No, you know, I mean, this past week was basically, the main focus was which guys are going to be on the court for the Celtics, not so much on the sidelines. And being down in Orlando, the big hype was around Billy Donovan. So, unfortunately, all the Celtics front office and coaching rumors were pushed to the back burner a little bit down there.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the players that were working out just before you came on the line. You said that mostly what you were able to see was the second rounders. Is that part of the reason that the Billy Donovan, story took a hold so much? Is that because a lot of the major prospects, you weren't really getting a chance to take a look at them?
Oh, yeah. You know, the projected top 10 picks, they weren't there. They were working out privately. So what you were looking at were a lot of, late first round, second round, and some people who might end up playing in Europe next year and not be drafted at all. And especially being down in Orlando, you were caught in the thick of it. So the Billy Donovan story was a big one. And also when that Kobe, I'd rather play on Pluto than with the Lakers story came out, everybody was buzzing about Kobe could play here, Kobe could play there. So the actual draft was overshadowed a lot by the drama surrounding the NBA right now.
Well, talking about drama, Jess, there's been a lot of rumors, and certainly very little has actually made the printed media, but certainly on the internet, message boards and the like, there seems to be a lot of talk about different possibilities, who's looking at who. Chad Ford right now gets to be king of the world for the next 30 days. I was wondering, have you heard anything specifically about that? And one rumor that seems to have gotten the most traction recently is something with the Hawks that would either involve swapping the third and fifth pick or giving them the fifth pick and getting the 11th pick in return. Have you heard anything about that? Any sort of rumors around the Hawks at all?
I haven't heard specifics, but when I did talk to Doc last Thursday down in Orlando, they're very open to every possibility. So whether that is drafting, like you guys are saying, drafting Yee with the fifth pick, or if it's trading up, trading down in the draft and throwing some players in there, they know that they have to do whatever they need to do to win next season. Like I said before, there is so much on the line. So there's going to be a ton of trade talk because they have to do, what's going to put them in the best contention. There's just so much speculation with them this year. They're under so much pressure.
Are you surprised at all that, certainly I think JB's point, or I guess the details that came out last week about Doc seems to indicate that while they've all put a brave face on in public in terms of we're all sticking together and we're all in this together, that the details behind this is that there actually is, some change in that ownership and management are not happy. It seems as though that's how this is playing out, that perhaps while the public face is one thing, behind the scenes there's much more concern than what they would like us to believe in the press.
Mm-hmm. It's like I can only comment on what I've heard from, let's say, Wick and Doc and Danny, and that is that they all stand behind each other. Doc's down there saying that he trusts Danny to be the eyes of the scouting and checking out all the players. And Wick said even during the season that he has faith in Doc. It's almost like there's the family with maybe the unhappy marriage, but the parents are putting on the front just to, protect the face of the family. And from what the people in the organization say, they're all standing behind each other. But then again, what goes on behind closed doors with the Celtics and really in any type of business, you can only wonder.
All right, Jess, I got a quick, this is JB. I got a quick one from the pit. Man Up wanted to know your opinion as to whether this draft is as deep as people have promoted it.
Oh, I think so. And one of the reasons why I would say that it is because there is that whole rule now about you have to play 1 year in college. You're not going to get that one-hit wonder like someone in high school who never had the chance to step up on the big stage and prove himself. So when you know, maybe last year there'd be a little bit more speculation about Kevin Durant and the younger guys. They've had time. They've gone on to the NCAA tournament. They've performed in front of millions of people on national television. I think this year they're a lot more equipped to deal with the pressures of being in the NBA, actually being an adult. And it's interesting, I was talking to an assistant coach down in Orlando, and we were talking about how long it takes for a player to fully become an NBA player. And he said that you have to give them a year just to learn how to be a pro. And these guys who have now been forced to play 1 year in college, that gives them the advantage. They'll be able to jump into that 1 year a lot quicker than if they had just come straight from high school.
Okay, man up, thanks us both. Now I'm going to press you back a little harder on my initial question. This came from our friend Jerry from Israel, and a little later I'll get to what he's saying about David Blatt. He's following that story in the Israeli papers. Here's the guy, Jessica, you might not have heard last week, but he went to the Wailing Wall in Old Jerusalem and put a note inside the rocks there as a prayer for us to get Odin Durant in the draft. He's a very sincere, very ardent Celtics fan who moved to Israel 10 years ago. Anyway, here it is. A thought for Jesse or the group. I always thought that management does not interfere with the hiring of assistant coaches. This is Doc's choice alone. It seems here, if the rumor is true, hired or not hired, that there definitely is a change in the relationship between Danny and Doc. Tony Brown was let go. Let's not forget that. If he was so darn good, they would have found a way to keep him. To be short, I think Ainge was paying closer attention to the team last season than given credit for, that he disliked our defense and is out to improve it next year, hence the supposedly high interest in Corey Brewer, as well as getting rid of the cause of the poor D, Brown, and stepping in front of Doc, essentially saying that he will do the hiring this time.
You know, I mean, like I was saying, everybody in this organization is under so much scrutiny this year. And if Tony Brown wasn't the right person to get the job done, I think that Danny would be letting the team down by not stepping in and taking care of what they need to do. I mean, you look, even just to relate it to baseball, you look at the New York Yankees, everybody was falling down hurt this year, so they fired their strength and conditioning coach. The Celtics have seen what they can do with the right assistant coaches, with Clifford Ray coming in there, turning around Al Jefferson's game and Kendrick Perkins' game and really helping them. And defense was, you look on the court, you just have Gerald Green standing there and Sebastian Telfair and Wally Szczerbiak standing there. So whether or not, you know, Doc may like somebody, obviously that situation wasn't working out for the team. So I think that Danny Ainge would be doing his job by stepping in and, you know, putting the right people in place.
Good answer, Jess. And I think Doc probably ran out of relatives anyway.
Well, that's what made it curious, I think, for the most part, is the connection there. And then, you know, what it's almost like one family foot out the door. But let's go back to a little bit about the draft. We have another question from one of our listeners, and want to give a shout-out to Lance G. Gives us a question every week, and here's his for you. He says, of those lottery players that are available to the Celtics, which player, in your opinion, has the most intangibles? You know, not the upside or the skills, but the intangibles that would fit with the current team.
You know, I'm very high on Corey Brewer. I would love to see Corey Brewer in a Celtics uniform, and a lot of people will question that because he's not the biggest guy in the draft. He's not the strongest guy in the draft. But Corey Brewer plays tough defense, and when you look at the great teams in the NBA, you know, I hate to cite the Pistons now because of what happened, but they're a solid defensive team. Corey Brewer could add that spark that the Celtics didn't have last year. Like I was talking about, all the players on the court just sitting around, basically waiting for somebody else to go after the ball. You can't win with just Delonte and Brian Scalabrine throwing their bodies all over the floor. You need someone to play solid defense. And I also like Brewer because he came from a very unified team, so he understands that you have to win games by playing, you know, five players as one, not just one player like Paul Pierce just stepping up and running the whole team.
Not to mention he stepped out of the way often too. Like he didn't just know how to do that. He did it because there were other players on the team that, you know, needed to shine. It's a very good point, because team concept is seemingly one of the most important things to the Celtics as they go through this youth movement. There are some guys in the chat room. They wanted to know if you got a chance to see Jeff Green at all, because here's another guy. You know, he's supposedly 6'9 and a half with the new measurements that came out today. And last week we had a little bit of a scouting report on him. They were saying that they really felt, somebody, you know, from the area that watched him play in college regularly said that they really thought he was more of a small forward. And we've heard that, Jeff Green is kind of in the mix there. Somebody might be looking at Jeff Green or Corey Brewer and trying to make a choice between the two. Do you think Jeff Green is strictly a small forward, or do you think he's got a shot at playing power forward? And what's your general impression of him?
You know, unfortunately, I wasn't able to see Jeff Green. He was part of that group that wasn't there. They were doing the private workouts. I would consider Jeff Green to be my number two to Corey Brewer. If you need just a defensive threat who can also score and, you know, just basically do all the little things that you need to help a team win. But I'd pick Jeff Green at the five. No, I would definitely pick Corey Brewer over him.
Jess, I want to ask you a question about your column from last week, or I guess your article last week that you had when you sat down with Doc. There was one point that really stood out to me, and it was the point where he talks about looking for a point guard, and he said, "We're always looking for a point. I always leave out bigs because we're all looking for bigs. What we're looking for is the intangible player that can't be a three, and that can't be a three, which I call a guard for us, but we're looking for intangibles. If we're looking for, it seems silly to me that every year the Celtics, Danny Ainge has been a GM, he's taken a point guard. Is this the year, do you think this will finally be the year they don't take a point guard? Or do you think that the needs of the team will finally come to the fore and they'll actually look for size instead?"
Well, when Doc made that comment to me, the first thing out of my mouth was, "You already have five guards." And then you start to think, well, you kind of still technically have Sebastian Telfair. I brought up Alan Ray's contract being up for extension. He said this doesn't mean anything to Alan Ray or any other player one way or the other. But down at pre-draft, there were so many guards there. It was a very small, quick group of guys. So the Celtics are lucky this year in the fact that with the 32nd pick, there are still going to be plenty of players available. They don't need to jump the gun, make moves, try to get Rajon Rondo again. You know, this is finally their chance. We're at the 5th pick. There'll be plenty of big guys available to them that won't be as many available to them in the second round, where they can definitely pick up somebody quick, fast, a lot of high basketball IQs out there. So I would not draft a guard with the 5th pick.
Gotcha. One quick question that's actually come from the pit. The last time you were on with us, you were talking about a little bit about Brandon Wright. Has your thoughts changed about him at all since then?
You know, I thought about that right before I came on the show, because I got a lot of flack for saying Brandon Wright at the 3. I think that Brandon Wright can definitely go as the 3rd pick. If the Celtics had the 3rd pick, seeing how everything played out this season, no, Brandon Wright won't be the best fit for the Celtics. But I still stand by the fact that Brandon Wright is going to make some team very happy, very high in the lottery.
All right, well, let's go to a little bit of the rumors that have been going around, because obviously lots of Celtics trade rumors. A lot of people have very strong opinions about that, not wanting the Celtics to make another Vin Baker-type deal or Rodney Rogers-type deal. I don't feel like that Danny Ainge is in a position to do that, but I understand where that's coming from, because a lot of people are concerned about his trade record versus his draft record. Basically, his draft record is spotless. I mean, I think he's done an amazing job drafting. I don't know that any other GM in the same amount of time has nailed as many picks as he has, or at least seemingly so. Obviously, there's more time to evaluate where these players go in their careers, but right now, I think that's a pretty safe assumption. Whereas then you look at the trades, his trade history, I think there's some legitimate concerns there. I see why he made a lot of those trades, but now we're hearing names like Jermaine O'Neal, Joe Johnson, Rashard Lewis, Paul Gasol. I don't know if you've heard about any of these. The hottest two recent ones that are tied to the Celtics are Joe Johnson and Rashard Lewis. And then, of course, because of the Kobe comments, now we're hearing about Jermaine O'Neal to the Lakers. Do you have any information on any of those or ones that you think may be stronger rumors than others?
You know, right now it's so to the point where a different name is popping up every single day, and then 24 hours later it's discounted as not being true. Once the Celtics say, hey, I have the fifth pick, or, you know, I have Paul Pierce, maybe I can swap one of the two, those twos away, I think every name is going to start coming up. I'm not placing validity on one more than the other, and by draft day, I'm sure we'll have 15 more names to add to that list.
Undoubtedly. I think JB's got a couple of questions, but you know, we're going to kind of talk a little bit about the playoffs. You had alluded to the Cavs-Pistons matchup, and Jeff, also on Celtics blog, you know, posted a quick thought about that, saying he thought he was watching the end of the Detroit run. I think he's right. I think a lot of people are feeling that way. You know, we just watched Game 4 and Rasheed Wallace getting thrown out, et cetera, but the whole highlight of that series for me was actually Game 4. Maybe I just said Game 4. I meant Game 5. But Game 4, the last, I watched an hour and 20 minutes. I just barely caught the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter and then both double overtimes. I mean, LeBron James was absolutely amazing, but I felt like I was watching, you know, a hockey game that had gone, you know, too far, and then they were just trading, you know, penalty shots, because all we saw was free throws, and then LeBron making these incredible shots, you know, with like 2 or 3 minutes in between attempts or more. And I think that that's, that particular moment was not exciting for me to watch as a basketball fan, but it was amazing to me to watch LeBron stay that focused with all that time broken up in between. What are your thoughts in general about that series, and what did you see? And do you think this is LeBron's, is he finally moving into greatness because of these performances? Or do you think he's still got to prove something in this series against San Antonio, even though he doesn't have nearly the same supporting cast?
Well, I think that, you know, LeBron's legacy is far from finished in this series. It's just beginning. But in order for him to be at the Michael Jordan level this early, they're going to have to go all the way, and they're going to have to beat the Spurs. Yes, what he did was absolutely amazing against the Detroit Pistons, but he didn't do that against the Detroit Pistons, who had the best record in the Eastern Conference. That was a completely different team than what we saw all season. So when he gets up there against the San Antonio Spurs, who have analyzed game tape after game tape after game tape of this playoff series, they're going to be ready for him. I do not think he'll be able to get the same performance off as he did against Detroit. And that's something that he would have to do to really be at that Michael Jordan level, is really beating the best. The Cavs are not the best. The Spurs are the better team in this. So he has to overcome that disadvantage in order to be, you know, with his name thrown into Michael Jordan comparisons there. But I do agree with you with the point you were talking about you liked watching the game, but then you also didn't like it. It's funny because a lot of people that I've talked to have been split down the middle. Some say, I love the entertainment value. I loved watching LeBron James nail these ridiculous shots. And other people are saying, that was one man taking on five players. That wasn't five-on-five basketball.
It was just boring. The pace to it was tedious to me. I didn't really enjoy spending an hour and a half watching them shoot free throws. And the only thing that made it palatable was the fact that LeBron was absolutely sick. And I'm not even a big LeBron fan, to be honest with you, personally, my personal feelings. But objectively, that was a stellar performance. But you know, again, he's the only reason that was enjoyable to watch. And I thought Tayshaun Prince really, really, you know, just had no way of defending him, and the team defense didn't do anything to help him. But I know JB's got a few comments on the series as well.
Sure.
Well, first, I wanted to compliment you. The last two articles you wrote were about that Pistons series. I guess it was after Game 5. You didn't quite predict that the Cavs were going to win, but you came pretty close and then covered them. And is this some sort of a career change for you, Jess? Are you going to go NBA league-wide now and abandon the Celtics coverage?
No, no, definitely not abandoning the Celtics coverage. There's a lot of actually exciting changes going on at Basketball News, and one of them will be, you know, transitioning to covering a lot more of the whole NBA. But I will still be at every Celtics home game, so I'm not jumping shit.
Well, you did a great job, although I'm going to pose a few scenarios for you for the Spurs Cavs series. I think it's going to be a lot closer than most people think. In spite of the Spurs' experience, I think that LeBron obviously, you know, gets a lot of calls, and Bruce Bowen is going to be guarding him, and Bowen is getting up in age now. He usually has a strength and height advantage on most of the players he guards. He will not have advantages like that against LeBron, and the referees are going to keep the whistle tight in their mouth, and I think that could be key in this series, because if Bowen picks up a couple of three fouls, San Antonio has no one that can guard him. And the other thing, I like Cleveland in that series because of Ilgauskas. I think he's one of the more underrated players in this league. I think Coach Brown is a very smart coach. He'll know that it's time to start going to Ilgauskas in the post, hoping to get Duncan in some foul trouble.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're talking about... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm waiting for your reaction.
To talk about Bruce Bowen, he's definitely a name that pops out to me. That team is so... Everybody looks at Tim Duncan and Tony Parker, but I remember back when the Celtics actually beat the Spurs for the first time in, you know, so many years back in March, one of the things that Don Day West talked about was the fact they were able to do so by beating out Bruce Bowen, who he referred to as one of the best defenders in the NBA. So that's going to be a very exciting matchup to watch. Bruce, like I was saying, the rest of the Spurs team will be ready for LeBron. You know, he's not going to pull a Tayshaun Prince and absolutely crumble and just get flustered. He's too old, too wise for that. But you also have to watch out for the foul trouble, too. And to touch upon the Big Z factor, he is so underrated. Him and Anderson Varejao both. Obviously, Varejao isn't as developed as Zydrunas Ilgauskas is, but he will quietly kill you down low. And unless the Spurs really, you know, jump on him early, he can be good for 20 and 10 a night.
Yes, I think that's right. I think that's one of the big keys to the series. I want to go in a little bit different direction, Jess. we had heard last week from an unnamed source who was allegedly an expert in international play, which just about had to be Chris Wallace, who probably figures he's got one foot out the door and was willing to talk to a reporter, that not only was Danny, you know, extremely high on Yi, but that Paul Pierce was being shopped. And have you heard anything like that? And what's your feeling about that type of a move?
Paul Pierce will always be shopped around until the pieces fall right in the place, because he's really the only guy except for Al Jefferson with high trade value. And in my opinion, Al Jefferson is absolutely not going anywhere. If you trade away at Paul Pierce, or, if, you know, when Paul Pierce retires, Big Al is going to be the face of the franchise. So they're not going to move Al after that performance that he put on at the second half of the season. Paul can bring you so much more than Al Jefferson can. So, and, you know, until they're in the playoffs and until they're winning, they're going to be trying to find the people that can bring in the most value. So you're going to be hearing Paul rumors up the wall this season.
You hear any names who they might be looking at?
No specific names, not yet.
Probably not until after the draft anyway, I wouldn't think. They want to see how those picks fall before they make a deal. It'll be a draft night deal if they make one, and it could be after the draft.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
John, you still there? Are you with us?
John, wake up.
Sorry, guys. I had my mic turned off, so that way if I made any noises or the baby cried or anything like that, I would disturb. So sorry. Sorry all out there. Jess, I wanted to talk to you. But I know that you also cover the Red Sox, too. You'd mentioned that you were going to be working on a story about the growing influence of Dominicans in the world of basketball. Obviously, they're very folks from the Dominican Republic are darn near dominant in the sport of baseball. But Al Horford being one, most notably. Tell us a little bit more about that. What you're working on, and who else you've been involved with on that story.
Well, I may have mentioned this before. I also work for a Spanish language magazine, which is called Sus Deportes, covering the Boston Red Sox. And one of the things that always strikes me is the pride that the Latino players have in their country and just, you know, the close-knit bonds. And you don't really see that a lot in the NBA. The lone Dominican-born basketball player in the NBA is Francisco Garcia from the Sacramento Kings, who plays for Rick Pitino at Louisville. And I've talked to him before, very soft-spoken, very, very humble, modest, nice guy. And, you know, one of the things that he says is how proud he is to be the only Dominican-born basketball player in the NBA. And then in this draft, you have Al Horford, who comes from Dominican descent, also Sammy Mejia, who will be working out with the Celtics from DePaul. He was born in the Bronx, but he's Dominican. And even Trevor Ariza from the Magic, his grandfather was Dominican. So there are a lot of names popping up that people may not know about. So I thought it'd be interesting to take it right to the baseball players, see what they thought about it. And they all say that, you know, there's so much support for players from their country, but unfortunately, since baseball is so dominant, people don't think that you could have a career in the NBA, because with basketball, you know, you have to start off, you have to go to college and then jump to, you know, go to the NBA that way. But in baseball, you can be 16 years old and the next day you can be playing in America in a minor league system. So it's just the difference of the way the systems work that are really putting up roadblocks for players in countries like the Dominican Republic to make the jump to the NBA. I talked to Robinson Cano from the New York Yankees, who is good friends with Francisco Garcia, and he said, you know, I'm so happy for him. I'd love to see him in the starting lineup one day. But it is that whole problem of you have to play in the Dominican, you have to make it to college in the United States in order for you to get to the draft, and that's where the tough part comes in.
And I know, I think I had heard that there are a few Red Sox players that had played basketball, you know, as when they were younger, obviously before they had that opportunity to come to the States in the minor league system. Was Willie Mo Pena one of those? Ortiz? I mean, those guys, they look like they're big hulking guys that could, you know, play some pretty good basketball in their day.
Well, that's funny. I said to Willie Mo, I was like, look at you, you're huge. If you grew up in this country, people would be saying, get in a football uniform. You should be a linebacker. And he said, no, no way. He didn't even want to talk about basketball. He said, in the Dominican, it's baseball, baseball, baseball. Basketball, you play it for fun, but it's not taken seriously as, you know, as a potential career.
Wow. Well, going on to this, the baseball front, I had to, as we kind of wrap up here, Jess, you had the pleasure of attending the Boston New York media game annual every year, I guess, once in Boston, once in New York, the media get together and play baseball. New York media against the Boston media, and there are some photos, and I happened to catch you on there and emailed you about it today. And there's a confrontation out there on the field, and maybe you could tell some of the fans about that and how that, because the bench is cleared, if I'm right. Is that right, Jess?
Oh, the bench is cleared. I will clarify for this, because there's some discrepancy between the New York media account and the Boston media account. But earlier, you know, this game is taken very seriously. People train for this, and you know, batting practice, all this stuff, and earlier in the game, Yuri Behringer from the Spanish Baseball Network, took a charge at the catcher from New York, who was actually just a fill-in guy. And he dropped the ball, and at Yuri's next at bat, the catcher told him to watch his ears. And it was Clappish, who actually plays, I believe it's semi-pro baseball, threw a pitch, smacked him right in the side of the helmet. Luckily, Yuri was able to turn his head and didn't, you know, get hit square in the jaw. And that was it. Benches cleared. It was a straight-up replication of Scott Proctor and Kevin Youkilis in the ninth inning last Friday night.
Wow. And from what I understand, that the Carl Bean, the Red Sox announcer, had to be held back, and he was ready to go after them. And it sounded like really quite a scene there.
Yeah, you know, Carl was heated. These are his players. He said he's going to protect his men in uniform. So this, people may joke about this being a media game, but this is taken very seriously. Luckily, everybody's okay. No one came to blows. So everybody was able to work peacefully in the press box together last night.
All right, Jess, I think it's about time to wrap you. We're going to move on and open up our phone lines. I hope you stay on in the pit with us. A lot of the people really enjoyed your presence there last time you were on. Is there anything you're working on outside of the Hoops World situation that you'd like to have a chance to talk about?
Well, as I mentioned, we're going to be transitioning from Hoops World to basketballnews.com. If you go to Hoops World, it will still direct you to basketballnews.com. You can check for that later on in the month. And after draft day, I'll be heading down to Las Vegas for the Summer League. So hopefully I'll be able to catch up with you guys from there with some good stories.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's great. Are they paying your way, by the way, for these trips?
We have stuff worked out.
Yeah, I'm sure she's getting taken care of, Jamie. But Jess, thanks a lot for coming on, and we definitely look forward to getting some inside scoops from Vegas. And you know, maybe JB may fund. All right, JB.
One more question came out of the pit, and I think we should ask Jessica. Who do you think the Celtics will draft?
I think they're going to go with Yee.
I love it.
I'm sorry if I'm breaking any hearts. You know, but like I'm saying, there could always be a draft day trade, but I think they like me.
Wow, so it's no smokescreen. You're buying into it. And I just think it's a whole bunch of hype. Jess, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, all right, thanks,
right
guys.
Right up until the Yee comment, it was music to my ears. JB doesn't need any fuel for his Yee fire. Thanks a lot for coming on, and we look forward to hearing from you again. In case anybody in the pit didn't catch it, that's Jessica Camaretto. She's from a number of publications online, one in transition, Hoops World to Basketball News, and also Swish Magazine. So a big thanks to her for coming on, and a great guest. We got so many comments the last time that she came on. You know, we can tell that she's going to be a regular. She does great. And very, very interesting, comments. I can't hear the Yee stuff anymore. I think the whole thing is just a big. Maybe it's wishful thinking. I do not have faith in this guy. I don't know why, but I just have this hunch that he's gonna be a bust. He's 23, and I think he's still a project. And I would rather swing for the fences with somebody that we've seen a lot more, you know, play. I mean, I love Horford, yeah. But
well,
you know, and
I felt the same way. I felt the same way in 1998. I felt the same way in 2001. But these big, tall, athletic, you know, guys from overseas are coming over here, and you know they're going to try to play in the post against these guys, and it's worked out pretty well for Dirk. And I thought, well, that's just Dirk. It worked out pretty well for Gasol, and now I'm thinking, you know what, maybe I need to re-examine what I'm thinking here, because there's obviously a reason why Danny Ainge went over to China twice. You know, you don't spend that kind of money just to look. You know, that's an obvious attempt that they feel pretty strongly that this guy can play. That you don't do that for a smokescreen. Yeah, you can say you like somebody.
Yeah, you do. You do it to pump up the value of your pick when you hear rumors like Mike Conley coming out because you want to make a trade.
But you're wasting your valuable time. You know, they have only a certain amount of time, a window where they can look at these guys. Why would they go to China when they could be looking at somebody else.
Because, because they still – look, I mean, it's still – I mean, the guy's a seven-footer and he's athletic. I think you do have to go over and evaluate him. They would be quite remiss if they didn't do that, and they would be selling themselves short as an organization if they didn't go over there. But, I mean, this is the classic player that people fall in love with, and there's limited information. There's just so much limited information. And I don't think that you get the same – in-depth scouting reports that you get after watching a guy play in college for an extended period of time. I mean, I hear you, you know, John, and even JB, you know, I hear the Dirk comparisons, but I also hear the Skeeta comparisons. And I you know, somebody said it in the pit, and I was going to take a look at the chat and see if I could remember who said it, but they said it was a home run pick. And that's what it is. They're swinging. If they do draft him, they're swinging for the fences. It's a hit or miss. And I don't know that this team needs to swing for the fences that way. They missed out on Durant and Odin, and now people are almost talking themselves into the fact that Yee could be just as much of a, you know, a hit-on prospect as those two guys. And that is just lunacy to me. And I cannot buy into that. I think it's totally ridiculous.
Well, you got some credibility, Jughead. Last year, if anybody remembers, we were doing our podcast at around this time, and you told us who the Rookie of the Year was going to be. Brandon Roy, you absolutely nailed that one.
Yeah, he was just the most NBA ready. I mean, that draft was a lot easier to figure out than this one, though. And, you know, so fair enough to the Yee. It's not that, look, if we draft Yee, and I want him to become a great player, there is no doubt about it. I am not going to put the Poulin curse on Yee if he comes to the Boston Celtics. I'm just not as sold above some of the other guys. And I wanted to talk
to you. I'll tell you, Jug, why it is worth maybe going for the home run here, because we have, you know, a great power forward in Jefferson. We have a very good small forward in the making in Ryan Gomes. We have a possible superstar at shooting guard in Gerald Green, and we have Rajon Rondo to run the point. The one thing we don't have is that spectacular big man in the middle. And not only, you know, can he finish around the basket, he can run the floor and lead the fast break. He can also step out and hit the jumper and make some room for Jefferson. It's a gamble, but it's the missing piece. As much, you know, Perkins has a great role on this team. He's tough as nails. He's learned how to move his feet on defense. He's a shot blocker. But we don't have an offensive center, and he's also a shot blocker, and he's a real ball hound. So, you know, he may not pan out. Look, nobody knows before the fact, but I think it's worth the gamble, because those other four positions, you know, are fairly well covered. I'm not sure that there's anybody in the draft, you know, that's going to replace those guys, especially with Pierce still here. You know, who is going to step in and start for this team, except a center?
Well, that's, you know, that's a good point, JB, but I'm not so sure that he's necessarily NBA ready and ready to start. I mean, if Perkins is healthy and this offense is still going to be a slowed down offense like you've talked about that you think it will be in our discussions months ago, but if it is, then I'm not so sure that, you know, I mean, I think Yee can still fit into that because he spreads the floor out a little bit. And he doesn't have to run to be effective. I certainly hear that. But at the same time, you know, if they are going to slow it down, Perkins may be more ready to play the kind of defense that's required in that kind of an offense. So, you know, I think, you know, yeah, you're right. He could be the guy that's the most likely to start at center. But there's a couple of things in the pit I want to bring out. One person said, I just don't regard Yee as a center at all, more like a small forward. Again, that just goes back to my comment about style of play. But somebody else said in here, I wish I could find it, but they said, guys, you can't teach height. And I just think that kind of attitude or that mentality is precisely why there have been a number of bust picks at the top of the draft at the center position. I mean, it is a home run pick to take a 7-footer sometimes, unless they're consensus overall number one, or, you know, maybe top three if you want to, you know, look at the Jordan draft. But I don't know. You know, I'm just very concerned, you know, about that. I'm just not sold, and you know, I will see. And somebody asked me, what would I do if Yee winds up being a home run? I will dance for joy and I will have crow for dinner every night for a year. I mean, what else am I going to do? You know, I'm going to eat my words, and I'm going to be happy about it, which is an easy position to be in if Yee does pan out. But I just want to throw a shout-out to all the people that are listening. We've got well over 130, 140 listeners right now. We want to hear from you. The phone lines are open. The phone number is toll-free, 1-866-751-9649. If you have the broadcast room link open, you'll see the phone number at the top of your browser. If you are listening to us from the Celtics blog homepage, the phone number is right underneath the embedded media player. I hope everybody's enjoying the show. We want to hear from you, and I want to hear what the listeners are looking for in this draft. Is everybody sold on getting a big? Because we talked a little bit about Corey Brewer with Jess. She said that was the player that she really liked for the Celtics. I think if you draft Corey Brewer, you really are looking long and hard at trading away Paul Pierce, or that's some of the, that could be an implication. And if so, you know, who are you looking to, you know, is that a, I mean, if you grab Brewer and that is the implication, then does that mean we're moving to a full-on youth rebuilding?
I don't think so at all. I think Corey Brewer is looked at by a lot of people as a Pippen guy, you know, that the type of, you know, that other guy, the other, you know, that guard that we've been talking about for seemingly, you know, 8-9 years now, to play opposite Paul Pierce, that offers the defensive strength, the ability to spread the floor, the ability to get to the rim, to open things up for Paul Pierce. The thing is that I don't think that we have, I don't think we have to have one of those guys. I think we need a big. I think we have two solid guys who we can count on, but you need more than that. I think we saw guys like Leon Poe play a lot of time, and while I love to see Leon play, he got more minutes than he ever should have gotten in that role. He should have taken some time and be able to build on that. And, you know, whether it's a home run or whatever, we need to look big in my mind. But it looks like we got a caller. Welcome
to Celtics
Stuff Live. You're on the air.
Hey, Alex, how are you? Welcome on to the show yet again. What are your draft thoughts? What did you think of Jessica? She did a fabulous job tonight, huh?
She's wonderful. I love listening to her. She really knows what she's talking about, and it's good to hear someone with inside information too. But anyway, draft talk. We were just talking about you know, how badly do we need a big man, and something that I was talking to TJ about earlier on, and it's on our podcast if you want to download that, and something that we kind of strongly disagree on. And that I think he has the advantage on, just because we haven't worked out Mike Conley. And I think I just want to hear what you guys think about not necessarily taking Mike Conley and having the goal of keeping Conley and Rondo. And I know that on the latest article that I wrote up, JB said that he kind of agreed with what I had to say about Mike Conley, but I'm kind of interested in what you guys think about taking Mike Conley, who, let's remember here, besides being the highest-rated point guard in this draft, he's, and this is kind of a side note, he's Greg Oden's best friend, all right, and playing for Boston, and do you think Greg Oden's going to be disgruntled after, you know, 2-3 bad years at Portland and want to come to his ex-favorite team? Is that a possibility? I don't know. But what do you guys think about Conley?
I think he's a good player. I just don't think he belongs in the top five picks. And, you know, if Atlanta does go for him, that's great. I mean, I think he's going to be a good prospect. I think it's unfair to make the Chris Paul comparison that a lot of people are doing already. I don't think he's quite there in college yet. Hey, it could be a big time home run. I think point guard is still a position of need for the Celtics, although I think Rondo can be that guy. But I guess more than anything, I want this to be the last. If they do draft Conley, I will accept it, but I want it to be the last time we have to deal with this. You know, settle on a guy and let him develop, because there's no more shuffling. They can't ever expect to find the point guard if they keep drafting a guy and trying to figure out which guy is going to be their guy. They just need to say, you are the guy. give him the keys to the team and see how he pans out. And if that's Rondo, I'm willing to deal with that and his jump shot and go through the pains, the aches and pains. I'd like to see a veteran come in for a little while before that, but you can't keep drafting young point guards and having them battle it out. They need to settle on one, say he's the guy, and give it 3 years, and then reevaluate. John?
No, I don't think that Mike Conley right now doesn't bring anything more to the table than what Rajon Rondo brings. And we don't need another point guard of the future. We've had 4 years, four point guards of the future, and I'm sick of every year having to anoint someone different. I mean, Rajon Rondo is the future point guard of this team until he proves otherwise. And I haven't seen anything that indicates anything differently. Now, could you see them taking a guy in the second round? Possibly. But at this point, the need for this team is in the front court. They need to get a big guy. We've seen it happen too much. And I hate to say you draft for need over best player available, but with 3 through 11 being so close in terms of where they're ranked, I think you got to go with need. And within that, you know, obviously need big versus wing versus point. You go with the big, but you also need to have the big that fits what you need. And that's why I look at guys like Yee. I look at guys like Jeff Green, who aren't, you know, your back to the basket, you know, go up, you know, really, you know, muscly back to the basket guys, you know, Perk and Jefferson. Those guys are very similar. You need to have some contrast in your front court. And that's why I look at Yee, I look at Jeff Green, I look at somebody who can maybe stretch the floor a little bit for them and give them a little bit of space to operate. Defense is important too, and that's why Green's efforts in Georgetown are something that really stick out in my mind. I hear what you're saying about Conley. He's a great player. I mean, he could be a great player, but he's small. He doesn't have off the charts athleticism, and he's going to have to take some time to learn the NBA game. All these point guards, unless they're Chris Paul or Deron Williams, have to take that time, and I don't think he's going to be somebody who can do that, and I don't want to take him on the whim that maybe someday we might get Greg Oden. I think that ship has sailed, sadly.
Well, Alex, thanks for calling in. We're going to open up the phone lines. We got time to take one more call before we head to the break, but I wanted to thank you for your call. Check out Celtics 247. They've got podcasts. Thanks a lot, Alex, for listening.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Thank you, Alex.
We're opening up the phone lines, toll-free 1-866-751-9649. You know, we've been talking about Yee. We've been talking about Horford. We haven't talked a lot about Brandon Wright. Why is he becoming – because, I, you know, people are talking about this. Brandon Wright is all of a sudden being left out of the conversation. He could be a slider. Would the Celtics benefit if he did slide? I'm not so sure. I don't.
Let me read a couple of things from Draft Express. I believe this just came out today. It's the private workouts from Orlando. Celt Steve posted it over at the Yahoo group, and I'll read about Brandon Wright. Brandon Wright did not do much to quell most of the fears about him, even if there was only so much you could take away from this setting. He doesn't appear to have added any weight to his frame since the season ended, and I think, you know, as an aside, we all kind of read the story about him needing to work with a dietitian. And his jump shot and ball handling skills were virtually non-existent, as we've been mentioning all season long. The fact that he was working out in the third gear didn't really help him out. On the positive side, he did look pretty effortless getting off his feet and ran the floor extremely well in the post. In the post, he also showed great fundamentals with a beautiful hook shot and great touch spinning to either shoulder. His arms are freakishly long. I've also heard that he sometimes looks lost on the floor. He's only a freshman. Do we need another Gerald Green type project? That's my question with Brandon Wright. Is he going to be able to play defense at the NBA level? Is he going to be able to interact with other players? He comes from a pretty good system, but it makes me a little nervous when they talk about people getting lost and not knowing where to go on the floor. The other note in that report from Draft Express, and we talk about big men. The other fellow I'd like to see the Celtics draft if they don't get or want Yee is Spencer Hawes, and Jeff Goodman told us he considers him the third best player in this draft. And I'll read, on the other side of the court, Spencer Hawes seemed to be taking things quite seriously, looking absolutely phenomenal in the post-drills with his gorgeous jump shot, jump hook shot, and incredibly soft touch off the glass. He's clearly one of the most fundamentally sound players in the draft. He told us he'd help himself here a few weeks ago when we interviewed him, and if this is any indication of how the drills portions of his NBA private workouts are going to go, he's absolutely right. Now here's another freshman that Draft Express is saying he's clearly one of the most fundamentally sound players in the draft, and that's, you know, quite a thing to say, and you know, we've seen his post moves, and they are special.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, he's, as I think elsewhere is noted, that he has, it was expected that he would look good in those skill workouts. And, you know, he on the right team, I think he is a very viable component, you know, to what they're trying to do. What I feel the need of this team, as I said a few minutes ago, is that guy to spread the floor a little bit. And, you know, Hawes could be that guy. I don't think he has the athleticism, though. That's what concerns me a little bit with him. But, you know, his numbers weren't that bad, actually. His vertical was a little low for my taste, but when you're 7'1", you can kind of get away with a little bit more, if you know what I'm saying.
But it's hideous, actually, I thought. I mean, you compare him to Odin, you know, six and 5 inches difference, but that's pretty big.
But you can't compare it to Odin because
his standing reach is even 2 inches shorter than Odin, and he's an inch taller than Odin.
So, right, but
I realize it's smaller.
That's like comparing, you know, Allen Iverson to Brevin Knight. I mean, Brevin Knight's a fast guy, but Allen Iverson's otherworldly. You know what I mean? It's just like he's special. You know, you're not drafting the number one guy. You're drafting 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th when you're getting Spencer Hawes, and you know you're not going to get that 6 inches of vertical with those picks. You know, you hope that maybe they'll be able to work out and get better on those. I think maybe what worries me more about Spencer Hawes is he only bench pressed, you know, with nine push-ups with the 185 pounds. I mean, for a guy that's 244, 7'1", that's pretty slight. And yeah, he's got to work on his body. He's got to get more athletic. I mean,
and didn't Draft Express report that he had done that? I think I may be misquoting this, but I'm pretty sure, and I have to go back and find the article. You know, I don't want to attribute something that's not there, but I feel like I'm pretty sure that I read that Spencer Hawes had been working on, you know, his body and his conditioning and everything else before coming in here. So, you know, I don't know where he came from before, but you know, if there is room for improvement in terms of conditioning and strengthening, you know, it could do a lot to allay my fears. But I think you're right. I mean, the guy comes in with that many bench presses after working out like a maniac for the last 2 months. That's pretty concerning, don't you think?
Yeah. Well, and the one thing that I remember from past years is that a lot of times big guys have lower bench press numbers because they have to put the bar up so far. And I know that sounds like a silly kind of a cop out, but it is true. A lot of the big guys do have, when they have long arms, do have lower numbers because they have to go that extra, you know, 3, 4, 5 inches that someone who's a little bit shorter, you know, a guy like Troy Bell can have ridiculous numbers of bench presses, but when you're, you know, 7 foot, you got to go quite a bit further. So, one thing I'd like to talk about though is a little bit about Jeff Green, because I feel we've all kind of talked about our little binkies a little bit here, and I Jeff Green's a guy that is kind of my binky here. He's 6'9 and a half in shoes. He's 228, wingspan of 7'1, standing reach of 8'7, which is all pretty good for a small forward, power forward type. But his vertical is 38 inches. I mean, that's pretty amazing. Al Thornton had a 41.5 inch, which is the highest of anybody of these guys. You know, both of those guys can do things. What I like about Jeff Green is that he's a leader. He led that. While Hibbert was a great player in stretches, Jeff Green led that Georgetown team to their Final Four. He was the glue. He was the guy that made it happen. He was a defensive guy. He's a passer. He does a lot of things. He did defend the four. He did defend the three, which is where the Celtics would probably be using him, both of those spots. I think that he fits what you're trying to do in Boston. If I'm not saying he's athletic like Sean Marion is, but he certainly has a lot of the skills that Marion brings to the floor and maybe some pretty good a better passing skill set coming out of college. So that's the guy I'm really looking at and giving a second look at.
Well,
so
I guess Danny Ainge was looking at him, too. We had heard, or at least that was the rumor. But, hey, we're going to take one call before we go to the break. Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live. You're on the air.
Greetings. It's Elrod Enchilada.
Elrod, how
hey,
are you?
Elrod.
Yeah, I'm doing really well. Thank you, guys. Good show, as usual.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm with JB. I think unless we trade the pick, and I'm not a fan of trading it unless something really phenomenal comes along, I think Yee, if he's there, and I don't think it's a guarantee he'll be there, is the best pick that I see out there.
So you like Yee?
Yeah, and again, I'm basing this on YouTube videos, which are about as reliable as like Paris Hilton's analysis of global trade. but nonetheless, he's doing stuff on these videos that, I doubt Spencer Hawes will ever do.
Well, you know what? I feel like we need to develop this call a little bit. We have to go to break. Would you mind just hanging on the line and coming back from break with us?
Oh, no problem. How long? Is it 5 minutes?
Yeah, we've got a quick Ryan Gomes interview that's about 3 minutes long and then a minute of ads, so 4 minutes. If you don't mind hanging, we'd love to keep you on a little bit longer.
We can call him back, too, can't we, Chuck? Take his number and give him a buzz?
Sure enough. If you'd prefer that, Elrod, we can do that.
No, I'll save you guys some money. I'll put it on my nickel.
All right, we'll be right back.
What happened to the 800 number? You could have called us there.
Yeah,
I called your 866 number, so we're cool.
Okay, so it's nobody's nickel. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to go to break real quick. Elrod is going to hang on the line, which is excellent. And just before we go to the break, I'm just going to roll right into it now. It's an interview we had with Ryan Gomes. Like we said, we're going to be playing a few of these interviews as we lead up to the draft, talking a lot about Ryan about the draft process, the pre-draft camps, and et cetera. So in the spirit of the Orlando pre-draft camp and the upcoming pre-draft camps, we're going to get Ryan's insights. He's a pleasure to talk to, and he's got a lot of information.
Ryan, talk a little bit about pre-draft camp and how measurements, impact your draft status.
Yeah, I think measurements impacts it a lot. If you look at myself, I was in college, I played the power forward. I was listed as 6'7", 6'7" and a half. And then, when I went out my junior year, coming back, they said I was going to be a 3 in the NBA. So I said I had to alter my game and try to work as a 3 because that's where I knew I was going to probably be drafted at. And I came to the Celtics in the beginning of the year. That's what they wanted me to be, as a 3. So, I think your height has to play a factor in being able, if you're at a certain height, you got to be, 6'7" in the NBA. Some guys make it as a power forward. Some guys got to be, a tweener. And if you're a tween, you got to be able to put the ball on the ground, hit open shots, and create plays. And, some guys might get, and their college media guy might be taller than what they get when they get to the NBA team. And that can hinder their draft status, I'll say your draft pick, where you think you're going to get drafted, because inches play a big role. If you know how the NBA works, for a certain position, you're supposed to be a certain height and a certain weight, unless you get an opportunity to get out there on the court and you show you can do what you do at whatever position you're at.
But they're more forgiving with weight than they are with height.
Yeah. Height is the more effective, because weight, you can easily, go work out for 3 straight weeks and lose 10, 15 pounds. But, height, you can't be 6'9", and then they're looking at you like, on their radar, like, yes, you got coming out, he's 6'9", he's athletic, you run a 40 block shots, and then when you go measure up, you're 6'7". That doesn't work out, because you can lose weight, but you can't gain height, I don't think, once you get 21 years old.
I think you're pretty much locked up at that point.
So that's it. So that's what I think, some guys, it might play a factor, but, you have to see.
how inconsistent are the measurements, you know, from pre-draft camp in Chicago and then when you meet with each team? I mean, are you give or take a quarter of an inch or a half an inch?
I'd say a quarter of an inch, probably, give or take. Some teams measure with shoes off, and then they take that height and they write it down. And I say, well,
and add 2 inches when they put it in the media guide.
Yeah, and that's what it is. But you put your shoes on, and just all different things. But that's a lot of it is mental. I mean, you just got to go out there and perform, and have a good workout. They've seen these guys play in their colleges or overseas, wherever, how many games the pro league. So I mean, they've seen enough of you, and when you go interview, you just hopefully have to be a good interviewer and, speak well and, they feel comfortable with you, have a good time with them, and then, see what they say.
So, when you look at a lot of the stats, they show standing reach, they show vertical, and then they do height. Would you rank the three, does standing reach, do you think that should actually weigh out more, have more of an impact on a player's, because you're really looking at rebounding, so should standing reach be worth more than just your height?
I don't know, because a lot of it, they do vertical also. I do vertical, they do height, vertical, and then wingspan. I think those are the top three that they use. Wingspan for, when you got to defend the guy or, you got your hands out, your defensive slide. And then vertical is more getting to the, see who could jump and get the ball off the rim. Once the ball hits the rim, if it's coming off, guys that can get it. And then, of course, height. So if you have, if you're pretty tall and you have a good vertical, you're in good shape. And then your reach have to be, pretty decent. One guy who's on our team, Kendrick Perkins, he's a, 6'11", but his wingspan is like, I think it's like 7'4", a guy who would be 7'4". So, that helps him out a lot. And plus, he's a strong guy. He plays the five. So you need that when he's banging against somebody and then when he turns and shoots. You know you're 6'11", but when you get that arm up, it can change something. So that play, I think those are the top three that play a factor in when the scouts are looking at you when you go to work out for a team.
So when you're sitting in there and you go in and you get interviewed, do you get a feel for how the team wants you to fit at that point, or do you not really find that out until you arrive with the team after you're drafted?
You find out a little bit when you're interviewing them, because like I said, they watch you play in whatever league you were in before, and they like what you do. You work like from the year before, because they scout you probably for 2 years before you know they're even looking at you. Before I know I was looking at you, and they said, I see you have improved your field goal percentage, and the shots you took in have been much deeper. So they see you incorporated in their offense, and maybe as a jump shooter, or maybe as a guy who can spread the floor. So I mean, that they do look at that, and then when you get to the team, of course they'll add in a little bit more of what you do. But they like you for some reason already when you go in there.
Celtic Stuff Live is brought to you by Garber Family Dentistry in Salem, Mass. Garber Family Dentistry is a practice that treats both children and adults using modern equipment. That includes intraoral cameras so that you can see what they see, and digital radiography. That's 90% less radiation than conventional x-rays. They also use sedation for people who experience anxiety during dental procedures. That's Garber Family Dentistry. Give them a call, 978-744-8495.
About 1.5 million, 1.1, 1.1, go ahead, thank you, 1.1 now 50 last call, sold 1.1 million, thank you, bidder number 225.
Allen Auction Company, specializing in distinctive properties and municipal auction services. Using innovative sales and marketing strategies, they ensure that the auction day experience is both positive and profitable. Visit their website, allenauction.com, or call 781-592-8100.
We're back. Elrod Angelotta is staying on the line so we can talk a little bit more in depth. Elrod, thanks for hanging on the line. I want to hear a little bit more about your thoughts about who you think the team should pick. And I think you were saying Yee was your guy.
Well, I think I looked at it as we had Brandon Wright, Al Horford, Yee, and Joakim Noah are the four bigs that are going to be taken in the first half of the lottery probably, and those are the relevant choices for us. To the extent that I think we're going to be picking a big, I'm a big believer in always taking the best player available, but my casual read of this draft and everything I've seen suggests the best guy available, pick five, is probably going to be a big. So we're looking at one of those four guys, and I suspect at least two of them are going to be available, maybe three. And if Yi is there, he looks to me like the most intriguing of the four in terms of upside. And all of them have intriguing upsides. I mean, they're all going to be picked high for a reason. But Yi has extraordinary tools to work with. But again, I mean, who knows what it's like over in China. I'm glad Danny lives over there for the last year. And I trust his judgment. And I think, you know, Danny gives this guy, says this guy has what it takes. His batting average is pretty good. And we'll see soon enough whether he hit a home run.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I wanted to, I kind of wonder about a little bit is this whole Chris Wallace stuff. How is that going to impact, if he does go to Memphis, how is that going to impact Danny's drafting? Do you think that they are going to have, I mean, obviously they've been working together. Chris Wallace knows or should know most of what Danny wants, and he's picking, he's taking the selection a pick ahead of the Celtics. What does that do for Danny, and does Yi last in that case? Do you think Wallace and Ainge, you know, does, whether they share the same opinion or not, do you think Wallace, looking at, you know, knowing Ainge and having worked with Ainge, that if Ainge is really truly that high on Yi, do you think Wallace will take him just for fear of losing out to his recent former employer?
Well, that's a great question, and I've been thinking about that. You know, my concern would be, you know, the word now, and this is all at the rumor stage, but of course in the internet that makes it true, is that Yi doesn't want to play in a small market city. He doesn't want to play in Memphis. But that doesn't mean that we get him. He'll fall to five, because that could mean, if that is true, that Memphis trades him. And they work out a deal to Chicago that would get them Chicago's ninth pick and some other goodies in addition. But, so that's my concern, that Wallace will rush out to trade him. Memphis could take him, too. Maybe he doesn't mind playing in Memphis. Maybe, you know, he loves Elvis. I don't know. and I think Yi next to Gasol would probably not set any defensive records. But I tell you, you're going to have to play some serious defense inside to stop those guys if Yi is the player it looks like he might be.
Yi and Jeff Green are the two guys that I'm really looking at. So, you know, and I have a little bit of hesitation, simply because I haven't seen him. You know, and as you said, YouTube, you know, that you can only do so much with YouTube. I think it's important that whoever the big man is, that there is some flexibility and some different looks that are given for this team, because right now I think you have a pair of big men in Perkins and Jefferson that are somewhat similar in how they play and in what they're looking for, and neither one is, you know, a prototypical player in this new, you know, quicker, you know, smaller NBA, and it seems as though that would be, they both, Yi and Green and you know, to some extent Al Thornton, if you think he can play power forward, maybe good fits for that kind of game of the future, I guess.
You know, I don't think Al Thornton plays power forward unless it's in a church league. I mean, the guy listed out at 6'5.5", I think, today. He is not a power forward any way you slice it. Al Thornton, 6'5.75", 220. I mean, he's a wing, pure and simple. You know, one of the reasons Danny said he made the trade last year, the terrible Telfair trade that we've all impaled him for, when he was joined the booth for the Portland game that they won, Tony Allen had a great game right after New Year's this season, he said something very interesting, talking about Brandon Roy, what a good player. He said, basically, look, Brandon Roy's a good player, but I don't think he's going to be a great player, and I don't think he's going to be better than the guys we've got at the wing. And I think that was what he was tipping off his hand there, was that he's not drafting a guy to be a wing unless he's really sure they're going to blow, you know, Gomes, Green, Allen, Pierce out of the water. And, you know, I don't know if these guys in the late lottery are going to blow those guys out of the water. I don't know if they're going to force their way into the rotation ahead of Allen and Green and Gomes and Pierce. I do think Yi or Noah or Horford are going to be able to find minutes real easily. I don't think Brian Scalabrine is going to get in their way. So I think there's a lot of minutes available for bigs. I think we're going big. I just can't see any way we draft anything but a big. And if we make a trade, assuming Pierce is involved in the trade, I think it's a trade that will involve bringing a big back.
Yeah, I'm with you. Although if we draft a big, you know, there's always the chance of trading Pierce maybe to Sacramento for Bibby and their pick at number 10, at which point...
I don't think Sacramento makes that deal. Sacramento's going nowhere in a hurry. They've got a lot of contracts. They aren't going to win a title in our lifetimes until they clear house. They're not... They aren't one trade away from being a contender. They're going south before they go north. They're not going to trade for a guy like Pierce with that contract to add on and just be a crappy team with another $80 million in contracts. They're going to dump Schindler. They're not going to add
I don't know. I think they're going to trade our test, and they're going to need somebody to score points and play the three. But anyway, what I wanted to get to, Elrod, you know, there's seemingly something going on with the front office. We were led to believe that Doc was given a full extension for the 08 season. And we read from Shearer last week that it's only $1 million or maybe $2 million guarantee on that extension. We've seen Tony Brown leave. Wallace is looking to get out. Papil's looking to get out. What is your take on what's happening there?
Well, that's actually why I listened to the show tonight, because I don't really know exactly what's going on there. I don't know the ins and outs of the front office that well. Chris Wallace, I know, has been held traditionally in high regard by people. But the truth be told, when he was, you know, at command those 2 years between Pitino and Danny, he laid some huge eggs. I mean, his record. I mean, one of the reasons everyone likes Danny so much is because Chris Wallace sucks so badly. And so he might be a good scout, but I don't know if he's the guy I want making the final decision. I'd rather have him write the report and let Danny make the final call. Likewise with Leo Papilli, I don't know. I think he's got talent, but I don't know if he's the guy you want making the final decision. He was the guy, I remember, who was like jumping up and down about Kedrick Brown, like we just got Dr. J cloned with Michael Jordan. And, that was a major egg-laying by Leo. I don't know if we're losing a lot with those guys. I mean, I think the brains in the front office from where I'm sitting reside with Danny Ainge. Now, the other guys might be good, but he's the guy who actually pulls the trigger, makes the right calls at draft day. Those guys haven't proven to me they can. I'm not sure losing them means that much, because I think while Danny trusts their judgment, ultimately Danny goes by what he sees himself, and he's on the road constantly.
Yeah, I was just thinking it more. I think there's a lot we can say about Papil, who called Blount the Shaq of the Shaw, and it was Chris Wallace who scouted Potapenko for 2-3 weeks before that trade was made while Pitino was still here. He's the one that was so insistent on us drafting Kedrick Brown. He had the relationship with that coach down at the junior college. But I was thinking it more in terms of Danny kind of and or the ownership in their refusal to grant extensions and to give Doc more than the $1 or $2 million extension, that there just seems to be a lot less faith. You know, they talked a good game. Oh, I love Doc. Doc is our coach of the future. I'm sure he can succeed, blah, blah, blah. But in truth, when these details are coming out, it seems like a slap in the face.
Well, you know, Doc is an interesting situation. This team is almost historically unprecedented, certainly for Celtics. We've never had a franchise in our history, or team in our history, go through the period we've had the last 2 years, where the record has gotten much worse over the past 2 years. Yet, I think among the hardcore base of the fans, there is sort of an optimism because of the youth and the talent that wasn't there with better teams under Pitino that had better records but had no future. And so Doc is being given a little more leeway than a coach normally gets. Most coaches who've gone through the last 3 years would be fired, but they didn't give him, they didn't give him the huge extension. They gave him 1 year, so he's got 2 years on the clock. I think it was a smart move by management, and I think it's a smart move by Doc. I mean, I think that was the right deal to make. He doesn't deserve a big extension, but he deserves enough of an extension. So if he takes off and the team does well, he's queued up for a big extension. And if it doesn't work out, the team's not out that much money, and Doc can move on to his next broadcast gig.
Yeah, well, it was a great relief to me as well. It's just they seem to talk one way, and then, the facts showed totally the other direction. I want to ask you one more thing, Elrod, before we let you go. And my second round pick is this Finnish point guard Kaponen. I don't know if you've read anything about him. If you have any comment about him, I'd like to hear it. And or who do you like in the second round at pick 32?
Well, you know, it's so hard to ever make those calls because you don't know who the first 31 picks are. I've been following Kaponen, too. He's certainly intriguing on paper. He's a nice pick because you can leave him over in Europe for a year or two, let him develop. He's a young kid. But, you know, I think the moral of the story, if you look at the Celtics drafts over the last 3 or 4 years and what Danny's done, what he has routinely found in the second round are undersized forwards who are really good players but who don't have the size to be first-round picks. Going back to Brandon Hunter, Justin Reed, Ryan Gomes, now Leon Poe, it seems like Danny finds guys who are basically really good players but don't have quite the physical tools who to be first-rounders. And I expect that wouldn't surprise me if that's the sort of guy we're going to see him come up with again. He'll find a guy who's really got some ball ability, but for some reason just is downgraded. Slightly.
Like Ron Lewis. I mean, that's been the rumor that came out today, right? It was Ron Lewis?
And I wouldn't be surprised to see him pick. There, I don't think he picks for need. I think when you're picking that second round, you pick for need, you might as well burn the pick. There you pick for the guy on the board you think has the very best chance to have a career, in whatever position they play, because probably the guy at 32 isn't going to be able to come in and play right away anyway. So if you think you got a guy who 5 years from now could really be an NBA player, you take him, even if it is a position where you've already got four guys. So it could be a Ron Lewis. Maybe that's the guy that would fit that description. There are lots of guys. Jared Dudley could be that guy for all we know. You know, those are the sort of guys Danny has taken in the past, though. I mean, Leon Poe, Ryan Gomes. Find the guy who, if he was 2 inches taller, would be a first-rounder. And get that guy, and hopefully that, you know, they'll compensate for the height with his skill level. But get a guy as a player.
Yep, good observations. All right, Elrod, we thank you very much, as usual. Enthralling and articulate and well-informed.
And just to throw out, you know, Elrod, it's a little after the fact now. It's about 5 or 6 days ago, but you had an article on Real GM, and you called out all the worst moves of the Danny Ainge era, and the moves that you weren't so, you know, that you didn't think were such a big deal that maybe some people made a big deal of. I encourage people to take a look at that. I think some of the coaching news and everything else, you know, kind of took a lot of got a lot of momentum here at the end of the week. But I thought it was an interesting article, and it definitely sparks, you know, a lot of debate, because I think you can pretty much be, as every Celtics fan is divided on the moves that they liked that Danny did and the moves that they didn't like. So definitely an intriguing article, and I enjoyed the read. Thanks a lot, Elrod.
My pleasure, guys. Keep up the great work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care.
So we're going to open up the phone lines again, 1-866-751-9649. I wanted to just mention real quick about the Ryan Gomes interview, because we had Elrod waiting. I thought that was a pretty good interview, as far as Ryan is really easy to speak with and had a lot of insightful things and did a good job just kind of keeping a good flow to the interview, and I hope everybody enjoyed that. I liked his thoughts about the statistics and how teams kind of have a good idea of where they want, you know, what they kind of are looking for a player to do, having watched them in another system. And finally, the one other thing I wanted to mention about that interview is we are going to have that posted up on Celtics blog and Celtics Stuff Live tomorrow. So you'll be able to listen to the interview outside of the outside of the archived show from tonight, if you're interested in that. And I also want to throw quick request out to all of our iTunes listeners, you know, not to forget about the fact that they can call that toll-free number. I'll give it to you again, 866-751-9649. You can call that at any time during the week to leave us a voice message for our guest for next week. We do have somebody lined up, and I'll let John talk about that in just a second. But you can also email us, contact@CelticsStuffLive.com. That'll get to all three of us or any one of us. We usually respond to those emails even before we use them on the show. And talk, you know, a little Celtics with you. So we look forward to getting those voicemails and those emails from the iTunes listeners. Appreciate it, everybody. And one last thing, Just about sponsors, big thanks to Gold Rarities because they step forward and have the naming rights for the NBA draft show of Celtic Stuff Live on CelticsBlog.com. And there are plenty more spots open. So, again, you can use the CelticsBlog@gmail.com to get more information on that. John, why don't you talk about our guest for next week and let people know who we're going to have on.
Yeah, well, making his return to the Celtic Stuff Live stage of madness will be Steeple Pett of the Boston Herald. Had a chance to talk with Steve and this past week, and we've been going back and forth on a couple different dates, and finally it was a date that we were free and he was free and he was ready to come on last night, but unfortunately Jughead wasn't, so that kind of made it difficult for us.
Oh, sure. It's all my fault. It's all my fault.
I was going to try to find some way to turn it on back to you. So, Steve's going to join us next week, and I'm interested to see how the world turns or how sands go through the hourglass over the next week and all the different rumors and innuendo over that time, and see if you can maybe shed some more light on what's going on in those back rooms and smoke-filled hallways. So looking forward to have him on there. And one thing that I'm hoping either will be wrapped up by then or we'll have some information on is this lead assistant situation that we've talked a little bit about here and there throughout the course of this week and last week. Of course, as we've mentioned, Tony Brown is now headed for greener pastures, or not so greener pastures. Yes, and Tony also had the privilege, or perhaps the black mark on his resume, of being the Celtics' lead assistant and the defensive guru for the team. Well, I think there's a lot of question about the general quality of coaching on this team, and perhaps a new lead assistant could help that in a great number of ways. Two names have surfaced since that first began. Obviously, there was a great deal of talk about David Blatt, and I'm going to have JB get into some more information that he learned from our good friend Jerry in Israel. But the other name is Tom Thibodeau, and I want to talk a little bit about Tom. Tom is actually an New England native. Went to Salem State, actually coached at Salem State for a number of years before getting the Harvard job, and eventually joined Jeff Van Gundy's staffs. And he's been Jeff Van Gundy's lead defensive assistant for the last number of years. And from what I understand, he's been the lead defensive assistant on the teams that have had the lowest field goal percentage in the last 6 years. And I read that off Real GM, and I haven't had a chance to check it, so I may be completely wrong on this one. But there was a poster there that had come up with that information, which I thought was very interesting. Of course, the idea of having a Jeff Van Gundy-run team frightens me to no end. So I'm automatically right on the David Blatt bandwagon right there. But at the same time, it'll be a different take. And, I think we certainly... There's a lot of calls out there for Doc Rivers' head, and we know that he's not in a long-term situation here if he doesn't succeed. That's blatantly obvious at this point. But there is an opportunity in changing the coaching staff to make a positive change without having the top guy go. And we saw that last year. Cliff Ray came in and did great wonders for Al Jefferson and even for Kendrick Perkins once he was able to get healthy. So maybe that will have the same dividends here for the defense of this team, because we all know that is the biggest Achilles heel. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But JB, I know you have more on the David Blatt situation.
Yeah, well, to fill people in, David Blatt, there was a rumor out of an Italian paper a week or 10 days ago, and there was speculation even before Tony Brown announced that he was leaving that the Celtics might be interested in him. It certainly seemed that he was interested in the Celtics, and he is known as a defensive magician. He had won championships in Israel, Italy, and in Russia. He was coach of the year two times in Russia, once in Italy. And there was a lot of positive support for his name because of his defensive reputation. There was a poster that said that most of the defenses in Europe are now using his schemes, that he's so inventive. And you can look at his face and you can see an intellect there, maybe unlike our present coach, who either looks angry or bewildered most of the time. This is a fellow that looks like a real student of the game as you look into his eyes and his face. There was a question about where he was born, and one of the reports said Kentucky. People wondered where the Boston connection came from, and one of our readers of our blog named Scott wrote in today that David Blatt was brought up in Framingham, Massachusetts, where he was a star in the 1974-1977 for the Framingham South Flyers. His idol was Bill Russell, and he's been a Celtics fan all his life.
Well, we should ask Steve Volpetta about that next week.
Yes, we will.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the bad news is, from Jerry in Israel, I heard him speak on the Midnight Radio Newscap. Yes, he does speak in Hebrew, and very well. It seems that he is asking Maccabi Tel Aviv for way too much money. However, Maccabi is determined to bring him back. He said that while to coach again in Tel Aviv would be one of his dreams, it is still mute to talk about it as long as it is not actual. That's it. No place have I heard NBA, Celtics, etc. Here the thinking is it is only a matter of time till the prices meet. Today's paper did mention other offers and some of very high positions. Somebody else wrote that he was asking for $1 million. That would be too much, perhaps, for the Celtics to pay for a lead assistant. I'm not sure that's true. Something is happening in the Celtics front office. Somebody has been talking to David Blatt. Would he come here without a promise of being a head coach? Would he go back to being an assistant just to get his feet into the NBA? I think it's doubtful. I think he stays in Europe or Israel or overseas as a head coach until there's an opening here. He's been alerted that Doc is on a short leash. I think maybe not more than that.
I wondered if the Blatt stuff wasn't just a way to try and pump up his price from Maccabi. I mean, that's what I was gathering. But
well, let me just – I wanted to add this today because I don't know if you guys had a chance to check this, but on Celtics blog there was a post by a gentleman on here, or it could be a lady for all I know, that there was a post from an Israeli newspaper claiming that Maccabi Tel Aviv had announced its new manager and superstar Oded Katash, and if I'm butchering that, forgive me, friends in Italy. I'm sorry, in Israel. But apparently, if that's true, then the Tel Aviv job is filled. And there is one line in here in this post that says he's actually asked about his future but does not give any information except for saying that he is still coaching in Italy and will decide about his future in the next few days, which seems to lend itself to some other quotes in Boston papers that say that they'll have that situation wrapped up with the lead assistant in over the next week. So... ooh. And the plot gets thicker, gentlemen.
Wow. Well, let's talk about that some more, but let me just say that we've got about 15 minutes left in the show, and we'd like to get one more call in. There's time, 866-751-9649. JB, where are you going to go with this? You seem to be developing this theory. Where are you taking this? What's your call? What's your final call?
In terms of Blatt and the coaching thing?
Yes.
I've got a feeling that Doc and Danny and ownership have kind of reached some fraying points. I think that Doc's re-up was done under some duress and pressure from him on the ownership, who didn't want the publicity at that time to fire the coach after all those injuries for whatever reason. I think that Danny has been exploring all their alternatives. I think that they probably have talked to Blatt. I think that he probably told them, no, he won't come unless he's going to be the head coach. And I think, Doc doesn't get off to a very strong start. He could be gone by Thanksgiving. And whether or not Blatt can get something in his contract over there that would allow them to release him, I think he would become the next coach of the Celtics.
All right. Well, you want to get to some of the – you've compiled a bunch of mock drafts, and people are moving around a little bit. If you want to talk – oh, actually, why don't we go to the caller? We got a caller. Yep. Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. This is Eddie from New York.
Eddie. Thanks for – oh, I've exchanged emails with you a couple of times, have I not?
Exactly. That's me.
Excellent. Did Monday night suit your schedule, I think?
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show. And, what are your thoughts on all this? It's good to hear from you live. Thanks. Great call. And what are your thoughts on the draft? Who are you taking at four? Do you like Yee? You know, whose side are you taking?
Well, it's a tough one, but my call was really more of a question to you guys. Going back to when Dallas picked Dirk, what was his information? Like, what were his numbers back in Germany? I mean, because we don't really have that much information. Even back day in those the draft day, it was like nobody really knew where this guy came from.
You know, that's a good question, and I actually have no idea. We'd have to do some research on that. I wonder if we could find that on, like, the FIBA website or something like that. And John, do you have any ideas where we might find some of Dirk Nowitzki's old stats? Pre-NBA? That's going to be a tough dig up. I'll actually put out I'll put that out to some of our listeners. If somebody can come up with that information, I've got a copy of Johnny Most's autobiography, or it's not really his autobiography, but it's his biography. I will send that to the person who can get the statistics. I'm putting that out right now because, I'd love to see. I'd love to know what those numbers are. It would be good to compare it, to what we've gotten from Yee in his league. I think that's where you're going, Eddie. Is that right?
Yeah, correct. I'm actually pulling for Yee right now. I mean, we don't have the number one, number two, so definitely we have to go for hype.
We have to go for the hype. You're looking for the guy. You want to hit a home run. You want to get the guy that could pay off the biggest.
Yeah, I'm bringing up Ortiz.
Yeah, you know, I want a player. I think this team, I don't think this team is super close to winning a championship, but I think this team is close to doing well in the playoffs, and I think I'd rather see a guy who can come in and play flexible a little bit and see what Danny can do in terms of trades to, get the balance of the team right, as far as the roster and the best A players and et cetera. And, I like Al Horford for that reason. I think Al Horford can play both styles of ball. I think he can adjust to whatever the Celtics wind up doing. If they wind up getting slowed down or if they play up tempo, I think he can do that. I think he's a defender. The team needs another post defender. And I think he can rebound. And I think those are things they're looking for. I think Al Jefferson is a good rebounder. But, I think he provides the offense and the post that this team needs. And so I'm not so concerned about Horford's, his shot. I think there's time for it to come along, but for him to still be valuable to this team. And even more on top of that, I'd look at his, his teammate at Florida, Joakim Noah, except for the fact that his jump shot is the ugliest thing I've ever seen. I don't know if I could put up with it. I don't know that my psyche could handle watching a Celtics player shoot the ball that way. But, that's probably superficial. It's probably not a total basketball analysis on my part. But I just, I want to see somebody, that floater in the lane of Al Horford's in the championship game. I like that. I think he's got the general mechanics and the general skills to develop over time. But chalk up another one of the Yee people. It's becoming a posse around Celtics Nation. I'll tell you that. I'm quickly becoming a minority.
Well, that's all, guys, I have to say. Just keep the good job.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eddie. Nice to talk to you for the first time after exchanging emails.
All right. Take care, JV, and everybody else.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Eddie from New York. We've been trading emails for a while. Good to hear from him. And we're looking to wrap up the show here. We got about 7 minutes left. Do you guys just hate Al Horford? You haven't really debated it with me. Nobody's really come back at me about why we shouldn't take Horford. It's just, you know, we should take Yee, or, you know, we should look at Corey Brewer. You know, that's what I'm getting. But nobody is really coming back at me and saying why we shouldn't take Horford.
Well, I got a reason, and it's because I don't want to see Al Jefferson having to defend at the five. I think it's a big mistake for him. It puts too much pressure on him. He'll pick up fouls, or he'll do matador defense to keep himself in the game. He's a scorer. He's an offensive player, and we need somebody big in the middle. I think Horford, you know, might be a very nice player, and I've liked him, but I think our power forward spot is full, and I don't want to see Doc going back to his junk lineups. I don't want to see Jefferson at center, and, you know, a power forward, and you know, who knows at the three. I mean, Jefferson belongs at the four. Pencil him in, leave him there for the next 10, 12 years, and let's work on getting a center who can defend the paint.
Okay. Well, I have a different take, I think I've already laid out this a bit. I think Al Horford's best case scenario is Horace Grant. I think Horace Grant was a great player. I loved watching Horace Grant play. He was probably my favorite player on those Bulls teams of the early 90s. But we don't need Horace Grant right now. We need more than Horace Grant. You know, we needed Greg Oden. We needed Kevin Durant, and we didn't get either one. And that's okay. We're moving on. But we need Al Jefferson needs a complement to what he does. You know, I believe that he has the low post area covered. He needs help with rebounding. He needs help blocking shots. I don't think he's going to be a center that, you know, in a traditional sense. I think it's going to be a mishmash. The way the Celtics system works is, you know, if you're a four, you're a 5-2. That there really isn't a difference. It just depends upon matchups. So I think that Yee offers a nice contrast with what Al brings to the floor offensively, and defensively. I'm still unsure about what he does, which is probably the biggest question mark I have with him. Horford might be good, you know, but I don't see him doing anything more than being just another cog in the wheel, you know, another brick in the wall, I guess. You know, I think that he's an okay player. He's decent, but there's nothing that at the fifth pick in the draft that makes me say this is the guy you really need.
Well, people said the same thing about Brandon Roy last year too, though. You know, that was the downgrade on him, and I'm not convinced that Tyrus Thomas is going to be a better player than Brandon Roy. And Brandon Roy had injury issues that pushed him down a little bit too, but. You know, guy doesn't do anything great, does everything nice, you know, that's...
Yeah, but that's not, I mean, to me, that's not, just because you win the Rookie of the Year award doesn't mean that you're, you know, somehow...
Yeah, I'm not going to say...
The best
I'm
player
not,
in that draft. Right. I mean, I don't know that I don't even think he may not even be the best rookie, you know, the best team, best player that Portland got in that draft. You know, I think I might almost rather have LaMarcus Aldridge than Brandon.
Oh, jeez, no, I'm not into because I don't like LaMarcus Aldridge either. I think the team is. I mean, I think the league is making a move to these more athletic, you know, kind of bigs, and I think there's hope for Yee in that regard. But I still look at the playoffs, and I think you need a center who has the ability to shut things down. And being a weak side blocker is not what we're talking about. And that's what I'm concerned. Yee's best defensive presence will be the weak side blocker. And I think that's a concern. I think you have to look at that. And, yeah. You know, that's where I'm coming from. I'm worried about the defense. And I think Al Horford can step up and play some solid defense, and I think we saw him do so. But he also, you know, just to make the counterpoint against my argument, he did have, you know, Noah playing alongside him, which makes him, you know, it's going to make him, in college especially, it's going to make him look as maybe a better defender than he really is. But it could also take away from what he's able to do in the post as well. You know, it does work both ways. But real quick, I want to throw out, we did get the Dirk stats, popped right up in the pit as soon as I threw out the question. I'm actually not sure who to give the book to. I'll probably just rip it in half and send half to each and then let them exchange emails. John in Montana, 33 points, 14 rebounds to lead a team of international juniors to a surprise victory over a U.S. junior team. Alex, who called into the show earlier, went on to say pre-NBA, Dirk named Germany's Player of the Year for 1998 by Basket Magazine, led his club to promotion into the German First Division. Prior to reporting to the Mavericks training camp, he was the leading scorer in the league, 21.4 points per game, and ranked third in rebounds, 8.4. Played 8 games with the junior German national team in the European Championships 22 and under tournament, and scored in double figures 7 times, including a 35-point 15-rebound performance in Germany's final game. So, you know, and it goes on. He's got some more highlights from Dirk's career, but I think we get the point. And I got to tell you, I don't think Yee's stats even compare to that.
No, they obviously don't. Yeah. One interesting sidelight there is that Don Nelson jumped in ahead of us. Pitino had gone over to scout Dirk and thought that he was going to be there for us at 10. And that was the famous trade where Nelson got Milwaukee to draft Dirk and then traded Tractor Trailer for him. We've heard that one of the places you might like to play is San Francisco, and Nelson is probably burning up the phone lines talking to Memphis and Atlanta to try to get that done, and that would be a horrible thing. First of all, knowing that I wanted Don Nelson to be coaching here in Boston a year ago, but secondly, to lose the player that's the apple of my eye to Mr. Nelson. Should I go into some mocks right now and let us wrap with those?
Yeah, that sounds good, JB. Take it away.
The first thing I wanted to note from some of the mocks, I've got a few of them up. Hoops World, which has 5 of their reporters mocking across a row there, 3 of them out of 5 say that Portland is going to take Kevin Durant, not Greg Oden. And that was updated on June 2nd. And if that's not enough of a shocker, we can look at Draft Express, which is probably the most renowned mock draft. They do the most research. They're the ones that I believe are even paid by some of the NBA teams to do some scouting for them. They have picked, and this is just out, Monday, June 4th, they have suggested that the Trailblazers will take Kevin Durant before Oden. I don't know what these...
Oh, JB, are you still with us? Oh. I think we just lost you.
Hello?
There he is. There he is. Yeah, yeah, you just phased out on us, but...
Did you get the part about Draft Express saying that the Trailblazers would pick Durant?
We just did.
Yeah, well, it's shocking. Shocking. As I say, I don't know who these people are talking to, but 3 out of the 5 at Hoops World and now Draft Express. The good thing that I take from the Draft Express mock, I mentioned last week that the apple of my eye in the second round, Pateri Kaponen, was listed as going to the Phoenix Suns at 29. They have now put Torian Green, the point guard from Florida, at 29 to the Suns, I guess off of his workouts down in Orlando. And they have Kaponen dropping to the Mavericks, the 4th pick in the second round, which they had gotten from the Hawks. So our young man, the 6'5" point guard, 19 years old from Finland, who starred for the Honka Playboys in his native country, would be available to the Celtics in the second round. So... I like that one. And looking at the NBA Draft Net, which is another one of the prominent mocks, they have Greg Oden going to Portland, number one, which I just think is a no-brainer. And they have Boston taking Yee at number 5, which, you know, just seems to make sense for me. They've got Atlanta taking Horford at 3. I don't know about that. I don't know what they want with another power forward, having taken 2 in the last 2 drafts, but maybe. I'm looking at an article by Siku Smith, And if you don't know Siku Smith, he is, you know, the man for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, been writing for the NBA for many years, sort of like Sam Smith or Peter Vesey, has national reputation. And he's going with Mike Conley in that spot. And he would be, you know, the ultimate insider in Atlanta. I think that makes a lot more sense for them. I don't think they can pass on the quote-unquote next great point guard after they let Chris Paul go by and Deron Williams go by in the last two drafts ago. And they need a point guard desperately. I think that's the way they go. And nobody else really seems to think that Yee is going to go so high. Draft Express has Yee at number 10, even after Spencer Hawes. They have Hawes 9 going to the Bulls. 10 is Yee to the Kings. Draft Express has us taking Joakim Noah, which I don't understand at all. They have Yee going 10 to the Kings. DraftNet, as I say, has us taking Yee. And last of all, old friend Chris Monter, who has a draft up on scout.com. And he is the, as I remember, the very first mock draft that I ever saw, it's got to be eight years ago, something like that, was Chris Monter. And he has Yee going to Memphis at number 4 and Boston taking Corey Brewer at number 5. And that's mock around the clock. That's all I got.
Oh, JV, that was hilarious. All right, well, we're going to be doing that. That's probably a weekly section here from here until the draft. And everybody's taking sides. They're making their picks. They're saying who they want. I want to get some emails from our listeners. Who are you going to take 5th? Why are you going to take them? You know, why do you like some of these players? Why don't you? I know you guys are watching. I think, doesn't Yahoo put up clips of all these guys, like little highlight reels every year? And I find that to be very helpful. Sometimes I pick up on things. Maybe I don't. I didn't know about a player. Can't watch every college game out there. Can only watch some of the highlights. So it's good to get some of the clips that Yahoo puts up. Have they put them up yet, JB? Do you know?
Yahoo put up clips for what?
They put up clips every year for the draft. They do like 3 to 4 minute highlight reels of at least the top, consensus top 20 to 25 players.
I have not seen them. I've been to their site a couple of times. I didn't look specifically for that, but I did not see it.
It's a nice service, so I'm keeping an eye out for it this year for sure. But good show tonight, guys, and looking forward to Steve Volpett next week. So if anybody's got a question for Steve, be sure to submit your emails to us. I'm going to give that to you again one last time. Contact at Celtics Stuff Live. And you can also call in a question for our voicemail, 1-866-751-9649. Great show, guys. Thanks to Jess Camaretto for coming on the show yet again. Another big hit. People in the pit are like, when is she coming on again? Jess, we just had her on, and they want us to book her again soon. So, we'll obviously extend an offer to have her come on our draft night show, and we're looking for sponsors still for that show. And very happy with our current affiliation or move over to Celtics Blog. Just a big thanks to Jeff and Bob over there for all their hard work and helping get the show integrated as soon as possible. I'm really impressed. Next week's show, just in case anybody was concerned that tonight's Monday night show was going to be a sign of some change. That's not true. We are going to stay on our Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. 7 to 9 p.m. Broadcast time on Sunday nights. JB, did you have one more thing you wanted to get to?
Well, I just wanted to mention, John Duke's idol, Peter May, in Sunday's basketball notes column. In addition to, and we never got to mention, Jimmy O'Brien, who's going to coach Indiana, and he had a great quote from Jimmy, who says, "I am what I am," old Popeye. But the big news from Peter May's column, as for a possible replacement for Tony Brown, the name of vaunted European coach and Framingham native David Blatt has surfaced. Now, well, where's the attribution for that, Peter? Where did you pick that up? That's all. That's all.
I'm not
all
holding folks. My breath. I'm not holding my breath, JB.
Well, that's a wrap. You know, you can't go a show without taking a poke at Peter May. That's for sure. So, I love it.
He loves it.
We love it. Celtics Nation. What's that, JB?
Thank you all for listening.
That's right, Celtics Nation. Good night, and we'll see you next week, Sunday, 7 to 9 p.m. With Steve Bulpet. Have a good night, everybody.
Unchain my heart.
Unchain my heart.
Baby, let me be.
Unchain my heart.
Unchain my heart. Cause you don't care about me. You got me sort of like a pillowcase, but you let my love go to waste. So unchain my heart, oh please, please set me free.